Hello and welcome to the next episode of the Pixel Parents Podcast. I am once again your host, Liam Kirkkelvin, and I'm joined, of course, by Scott the Tastemaker Curry. How are you doing, Scott?
Still loving this Tastemaker moniker. I'm absolutely fine. Good to be here. Finished work an hour ago.
Lovely.
Drove over here especially to record this with you, so happy to be here and excited to start talking shite.
And that is dedication for you folks, the lengths we go to bring you our patter, you know. But yeah, before we dive into things, like I said, this is a Pixel Parents Podcast. It's a podcast where we just chat about how we juggle life as parents and also with the hobby we love, which is gaming. You can find us on Twitter at Pixel Parents, or should I say at Pixel_Parents. And you can also listen to us on your podcast platform of choice, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon, you name it. We are everywhere. We're like COVID in 2020. And of course, we would love to hear from you as well. So we'd love to, if you send in your questions that you have for us or just get involved, we'd love to hear about how you juggle gaming and parenting yourself. And if you want to, you can email us at pixelparentspodcast@gmail.com. With that all out of the road, Scott, my first question is, what are you playing?
So I think we could probably just insert last week's into this week's because it's it's the exact same, just making my way through Rebirth. I think we've had discussions before about, you know, certain characters and how they look and how that might look to our loved ones, but it's hit a point today where it's egregious. Like, it's outrageous what they've done. Like, it's mad. But kind of, we were talking about it just before we started, and there's a lot of, you know, obviously the tone of the game, there's a lot of sort of kind of action and a lot of kind of serious tone to it, but I found that the last few chapters have really, the last couple of hours at least, have really hit a kind of humorous tone as well. I'm really, really enjoying my time with it. I think that I found the first few hours, you know, that first area of the grasslands, it kind of went quickly, then you hit the second one, you go to Junon, and it's like, I need to do this all over again, and with open worlds, I know that's your jam, but I was kind of finding myself flagging a wee bit. But having a bit of a time with it there, where I could actually focus a wee bit on story, and actually kind of move forward a wee bit, has kind of rejuvenated me.
Yeah.
And I kind of keep on wanting to get back into it. Breaking that up with more Helldivers. Mm-hmm. Recently. They've announced they've kind of shadow dropped flying Terminids in the game, so the flying bugs. So now they've got to kind of contend with that. So I'm really looking forward to getting back into that as well. And then just slowly but surely, this week for some reason, the little one has decided that her reward for going for a bath or reward for doing anything in general before she goes to bed, she wants to play Sonic the Hedgehog.
Right.
No idea where this has come from. No idea she knew who Sonic the Hedgehog was, but she also knows who Rose is as well,
because
mm-hmm. she's obviously pink, but just randomly said, can we play Sonic one time? So I was like, aye, of course we can play Sonic. So kind of rooting around, trying to find the right Sonic game to play, kind of not having to buy something because, you know, what's the point in buying something that we're only going to play for maybe half an hour at a time?
True.
So stuck on Sonic Mania, and it's fantastic. It was as good as the day that I kind of first played it to now.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves it. It's class kind of sitting there, and she can kind of move them along. She's not really having to do much, but she loves it. And it's those kind of wee moments that you do. That's the reason why we do this. It's kind of bringing it all home. So I think talking about what we do here now, and also it kind of coming full circle in a way, it's quite nice. You know, you kind of get to see a wee bit of progress and the world's merging. But kind of breaking it up. So yeah, Final Fantasy Rebirth, Helldivers, Sonic Mania, and if anyone can believe that I've got any more time to play games, what I've been doing kind of recently is if I've got maybe 20 minutes to half an hour where I could maybe sneak something in, rather than kind of churning through the open world or jumping on a mission in Helldivers, I've been booting up the Switch again recently and finally taking time to play Golden Sun again, as it was released on the Nintendo Switch Online, which was probably the only reason I have this thing.
Yeah,
is for Golden Sun, and I've left it long enough now that I think I'm ready to go back in and play it. So, four games on the go at the moment, and we'll see next week if any of them are still there.
I love that, the buffet approach.
Yes. Yeah,
wee bit of everything. That's great to hear about the wee one, though. It's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening. You know, I think in a lot of cases, it's different now because, like, when we were kids, video game characters very much existed only within that medium, and now you have, like, the Sonic movies and, mm-hmm. like, the Super Mario movies and stuff, and it's, you know, that gateway drug into things. It's the same, like, with my son. He wanted to play Sonic as well, and I had the same thing. I think I got as far as, I don't actually have anything here, mm-hmm. Sonic related, and I just kind of forgot. Sorry, wee man. But I think because he loves watching the Sonic movies and the Sonic cartoons that's on Netflix, and
yeah,
there's just so much content out there that can get them hooked on it. But that's great to hear. But to come back to the first question in terms of what you're playing, yeah, still Final Fantasy Rebirth, still on that journey that we've been on since we started this podcast. I'm a changed man, changed days. And yeah, I think, you know, I definitely have, you know, more thoughts on that. I'm probably about 23 and a bit hours into it at this point. So it's probably about the same time as it took me to finish Remake.
Because
I absolutely, like, blazed through that just because I just wanted the story. Just feed me that. I was happy all day. Whereas this, I've taken the opposite approach. I kind of, I've got in a gameplay loop of, like, instead of going through, like, the blue items, as I would say, I would then just kind of go, right, before I do that, I'm clearing the open world areas, doing all the side quests, moving on. Of course, Queen's Blood being my treat at the end of all that. Still absolutely in love with that. Please, if you're listening, Square Enix, please make more. Make a single game for that and I will buy it. You take all my cash. But yeah, I think I'm looking at it and I've got thoughts this week. You know, at the time of recording, there's been a lot of thoughts out about Rise of the Ronin coming up and stuff. And I've got that, you know, I've got my eyes on that, you know, as the next game. But man, it looks like absolute dog meat compared to the graphics on Final Fantasy Rebirth. And I'm not the big graphics guy. Like, I'll still happily play it, and it's all about the gameplay at the end of the day. But I was kind of taken aback, you know, like, because I think Team Ninja spent about nearly 10 years developing this thing. But I had the thought today playing Rebirth, and it's like, we're kind of spoiled by this. And I do have, it's a little bit bloody at points.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not perfect.
It's not perfect.
I think if you're playing it in performance mode, there's definitely points in it where I'm looking at Cloud's face thinking, it doesn't look right.
Yeah.
And something with Tifa, in comparison to the way that Remake looks, there's something just a wee bit off.
Yeah.
Don't know what it is. Not entirely sure what it is, but they're still gorgeous. I mean, Barrett is looking as good as I've ever seen him. You know, he looks phenomenal.
Careful now. Careful.
I know. There is something with Remake. And I was going to say, I'm glad that you brought up Rise of the Ronin in that way, because there's been a lot of discourse all over Twitter and things about it as well. And I don't think Team Ninja are well known for making games that are 100%, you know, blow away gorgeous graphically. You know, they're not that way. I mean, Neo and Neo 2 and all that, they're not perfect.
No, they didn't look out of place.
Yeah.
The Neo games, but you're right. I kind of put that away in the same category. They're obviously under, but obviously if you look at it from software,
mm-hmm.
like, I wouldn't necessarily say that these guys are like the big graphics guys. No. It's their art team that take it away, you know, to a next level, and it goes to show you just with good art how you can elevate it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think
that's maybe what's missing from Rise of the Ronin?
Potentially. I mean, still to play the game. I think it's when you compare it just to what we're going through just now with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I mean, the game is, it's a powerhouse. But I mean, mm-hmm. it's been developed for PS5 in the same way. I'm sure they have way more resources and have had way more time. And I think artistically, that's what they're going for. They're going for that hyper polish. But I mean, that's just kind of one of the comparisons that kind of sprung to mind as I'm continuing the game. And I think, you know, I loved Remake, you know, surprised you, surprised me. Or maybe it didn't surprise me. I think you knew, maybe. We'll see.
I think that the combat can hook you.
Yeah.
I think the gameplay loop and the combat can hook you, and there's so many different ways that you can play it. And having that, you know, the mobility where you can switch between characters is fantastic. Yeah. You know, even now, just playing Rebirth. I mean, I got introduced to a new character today. Well, an old character, but you know, it's changed everything. You know, it's class. So kind of trying to develop them into the party and kind of move everything forward is the most interesting part of it for me at the moment. And having the story there has, I mean, I think differently, because obviously you approach open world in a different way where you just want to clear. I think for me, I'm getting to a point where I just want to get to the meat and then maybe work around that. But I'm still persevering with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a win-win situation though, isn't it? Because if you beeline the story and you've got that world to come back to, and I suspect, you know, I've not heard anything, I've not seen any chat about it, I suspect that they're going to probably, I wouldn't be surprised if you get like 2/3 through the game or 3/4, it's like, hey, go back to all these areas you thought you cleared and here's more stuff. Because, you know, let's say I'm about 23 hours or something so in, and most people's play counts like 80 hours, and I'm playing this and I'm like, I'm rinsing it. I know like, that's more my approach with open world games. I enjoy that. You know, people would say, oh, you know, you're just becoming like a tick box exercise, but to each their own. I mean, to be honest with you, one thing that I found really interesting about it, given how high the praise was for the game, and from what I've played, I don't disagree from it. I think this is a solid 9/10 out of 10 game. But it's really interesting. It's like, if this was like another Far Cry game or Assassin's Creed, it would get slaughtered because they're not doing anything different in the open world and the gameplay loop. And if I'm being honest, I don't think that they're executing it as well as what you'd see in the Ubisoft games.
I don't think that their niche is open world.
It's not.
If you've played any of the Final Fantasy 16, but even kind of before that, you're playing like, you know, Stranger of Paradise and stuff like that. Shout out that game.
Kill Chaos.
Oh, so good. but I don't think Final Fantasy 16 did a really good job with the open world either. I think it's probably just something that they have to open out that game in a way that's going to make it, you know, it's going to make it this blockbuster. And it's going to sell regardless because people want to see where they're going to go with it. But they have to fill this world with daft shite that you just have to go and pick up, or daft stuff that you have to go and do. But with the side missions and stuff as well, I kind of feel that there's always a point to them.
Yeah.
Like, you're not doing it just for doing it. You're always getting this, your relationship with so-and-so has deepened. So there's always like one side mission per character. Yeah. So you're always getting to see a wee part of them. But I think, I mean, like yourself, I think it's just kind of, you say it's like a text box exercise, and it kind of is a wee bit, but there's nothing bad about that. Sometimes that makes it easier to get through these kind of games as well.
I mean, the reason I raise it is just because I've always thought, like, the criticism of it, which I can totally see, like, nothing's beyond criticism, but it started to feel fashionable at a certain point, because it's like, you're really just kind of, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Like, you're really just digging into something for the sake of it. Yeah. Whereas it's like, what are they doing well with it? Like, tell me what it is and not what it isn't. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't like open world games, of course it's not going to be for you. It's the same difference if I was to go and review like a fighting game and it's like, hey, that's not for me, and I'm going to really stick it to one.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it has become formulaic. And I was surprised, but pleasantly surprised, going into it like, all right, there's towers, there's stuff for me to do, and I can do that all day. And I think that comes full circle.
Yeah.
Really back to the value proposition for me, especially now. I think way back in the day, like if you chucked Just Cause 3 at me, right? And I'm like, fuck's sake, man, this is massive. All these wee things, I'm like, I can't do this. Like, I'm overwhelmed. Now, my habit has changed because it's like, right, I just need to switch off and I'm quite happy going across these big vistas and just kind of doing things. And Final Fantasy Rebirth has just been such a chill experience. And, you know, jumping on a chocobo and just like picking up all these items as I'm going along to the next thing. And these activities probably take about 2 minutes a piece.
Yeah.
If you're lucky. And I totally understand it can feel like a chore for most people, but I find that, you know, let's be consistent about it.
Yeah.
If you're going to, if Far Cry 7 comes out tomorrow, same approach, and it's like, right, are we given extra points because of like the nostalgia we feel towards these characters? If it was Final Fantasy 17 that took this approach, I feel that that might be the case. I think people might go, like you say, open world maybe ain't your niche, chief. Why don't you try something else in a more traditional JRPG style? But it's an interesting conversation. I'm not right. No one else is right.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else is wrong. I think that's the beauty of opinion. We all differ on them. And at the end of the day, I'm getting what I want out of this. Like, it feels like a perfect blend just now. And at first I think I mentioned this last week. When I first went into Rebirth and I was like, this maybe mechanically isn't handling to what I'm used to in an open world game. Even if I look at like Rockstar and stuff like that as well. And you're talking about the heavyweights, so it's not really a fair comparison. And I was like, and the camera issues with the bloodiness and stuff like that. And I thought it was, is it just me? I'm going to have to, you know, adjust the camera, get my eyes tested or something. But it's like, nope, it's not just me. I checked with you. It's like, it's something that's there. It's
pretty
but
widespread.
Despite the flaws, which games will always have, it's just so much fun. And there's been so many, we were speaking about it beforehand, there's been so many genuine laugh out loud moments.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're at the exact same point in the game just now.
I think you're probably a few hours ahead of me.
I think just
a few hours, aye.
Because I'm only about two or three activities into this third hub.
So you're probably a good portion ahead of me, I'd say.
Right, okay. So, well, there anyway, thereabouts. We've done a very good job of like broad strokes. I don't want to talk about any story details, God forbid, even though you know what's coming up. But it's just that I'm terrified in case I mention something. It's like, oh, Bert did this. And you're like, oh, who's Bert? Have they added this in? Have they changed the story? That type of thing. Because I know people weren't really a big fan of the ending of this game.
And yeah.
I'm curious to see.
I'm excited to get that. I think that's what's getting to me. And there has been bits in this now that are like, they're not, I mean, with anything, they're going to add more to it to try and maybe flesh out a bit, but there has been points in this where there's been stuff happening and I'm just like, what is this? What's going on here?
Yeah.
But I want to give a shout out for the, I don't even care, spoiler, whatever, right? If you don't want to hear it, don't hear it, but it's not even a spoiler, it's a side quest, but the song that plays when you're escorting that dog across
Sam.
Sam. It is so good. Yeah. Like, I could listen to it on an endless loop. Absolutely killing myself laughing at it.
That was a banger, that
tune,
actually.
It's so good, man. it's great. It's just so good. And just made me think, obviously, we're talking about outrageous visuals on characters, you know, bloodiness aside. But a lot of opinion recently because the demo for Stellar Blade leaked.
Right.
And have you seen some of the footage that's coming out about this?
Can't say I have, no.
It is unreal. And right. I mean, it's mad the fact that this game is going to come out and you could buy it. It's not gameplay, nothing to do with gameplay, nothing to do with story, just the way the character looks and the things that she wears. Mental.
Right. So if my mind serves me correct from the state of play, there was some, what's the word? Not an outfit you'd wear in the winter.
Yes.
Okay.
It's basically shaping up to be near.
Right.
But the same I don't even know how to describe it. It's absolutely mental. Like, just if you have a moment, even if you're listening to this, go and have a look on Twitter.
Okay.
Just type. I mean, I probably wouldn't type in Stellar Blade because loads of stuff will come up. But go and have a look at some of these outfits because it's wild. It is absolutely mental.
See, I need to check this out now just to see what we're dealing with here, because I know. I mean, that sells.
That's the reason why people are interested in it. You know.
Yeah.
But
teach their own.
Between that, whilst you're looking for this, because you've obviously spoken about Rise of the Ronin,
mm-hmm.
And I did mention before we started recording that I've got a confession that I'm going to make, but I wasn't going to go in early on this, but I see myself very soon falling into the trap of buying Dragon's Dogma 2.
Do you know, I had this thought the other day, and I was like, he's absolutely going to get this. Mm-hmm. He's absolutely going to get it.
I've been seeing so many character create, like people making their characters and stuff like that. Someone made Hideo Kojima. I've seen people make, you know, loads of different characters from kind of pop culture and stuff as well, but there's just part of me that I'd love to get involved in it. So I think that will be the big one that I buy next. And I watch this space. Just watching Liam look at some of these images that are showing up as well for Stellar Blade is hilarious.
Oh my god.
It's mad.
Oh my god. How is this? This is a PlayStation 5 exclusive as well. Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh my god. Someone just said here, like, the Stellar Blade cosplays are going to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And this picture, I mean,
yep.
Jesus wept.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. If somebody walked in a room like that, I would fall over because I'm just looking upwards. Like, I can't possibly lay eyes on this person just now.
There's a gif floating about that she's climbing up a ladder.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. Obviously,
we're all familiar with this again, a Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater ladder, but I think this is going to be the new version of that. People are kind of harking back to this. It's nuts.
Wow, I can't believe that. First, I thought that has to be a mod. Jesus, yeah, it's I'm still not going to play it, but
I can
see why people are playing it. But hey ho, each to their own. You get what you want out of these things, I suppose. A wee bit of TNA. So, yeah. But I think it looks like it's going to be Final Fantasy Rebirth for the foreseeable. I mean, am I going to get open world fatigue? No. Like, it's not something that happens for you at all. I will gladly move on to the next. I think I still have a couple of games that probably are open world. And then I've got a Spider-Man 2 replay. I want to play New Game Plus. Did you see this week the leaked trailer?
Yeah, for the multiplayer Spider-Man stuff. Yeah. I mean, where was that going?
Like, I think that's probably what's happened. You know, I think my guess is Insomniac have probably looked at it and thought, this just doesn't have the magic that's not up to our standards.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little bit surprised that it was the same style.
Mm-hmm.
I would have thought it would have been like, you know, like the Into the Spider-Verse movie type style. What was it called? The Great Web or something like that, I think it was. But
it kind of came across like a Sherlock Holmes kind of title. But I was watching it. I mean, I'm not surprised it's the same art style, because how could you vary so far from what they've done in the past? And to create all these different characters within a Spider-Verse setting would be difficult, and you're treading over the same path that movie's sort of trodden over already.
Yeah.
But it's just like the fact that it got so fleshed out and like so much to it already that it's just been canned.
Yeah, it's a shame.
I don't see it sort of faring so badly for sort of Wolverine and stuff as well. But if that, I mean, what's going on? It's something like who's leaking all this nonsense as well? Like, there's
that's probably more just who's unlawfully obtaining it. You know, mm-hmm. I really feel bad for everybody that's worked on these projects, you know, at Insomniac, particularly like the Wolverine one. I made a point of not looking at it because I was like, you know, this isn't how I want to see it. It's not how they want you to see it.
Proof of concept and stuff as well, isn't it? It's pointless.
Not even alpha footage at this point. And it's like, personally, I want to play that game, be surprised. I'm a big Wolverine fan, but it's with this multiplayer stuff, you must feel bad because you can tell they've put so much of that effort into it, and then they're the best in the business just now churning out games of a high quality. But when I seen it, I was thinking, oh, that's cool. There's Ghost Spider, there's Gwen doing her thing. But then I seen like Dr. Octopus turn up, and a few of the other villains that have been used at this mm-hmm. point, and it's like, how is this going to fit canonically? And I know we can do the whole multiverse thing, but that just makes me not care, mm-hmm. you know, because it's like, all right, this is just a big what if. But we'll never know. We'll never know. It's something that, you know, I'm sure mega fans will miss, you know, as time goes on.
And it's also interesting talking about that because it will come up later as well.
It will come up later. It will. But before we go on to that, I thought we were just going to go into our hot topic this week, which is, what things do you miss as a gamer parent? And I thought this was a good one for us to kind of talk about, but we're going to do our best to not sound like a couple of mopey old men here. Old, give myself some credit.
You?
I'm only 34 here. But yeah, it's, what do you miss? Is there anything you miss as a gamer parent?
I think that it's tough. You know, it's, you don't want to sound, as you say, kind of woe is me, because life changes and it's fantastic. And everything that changes with it is brilliant. You know, you have new routines, you've got, you know, new people to entertain and stuff like that as well. But if I had to, I mean, I sat down today thinking about it quite a lot, thinking about what do I actually miss? Because I think both of us kind of do quite well with the time that we've got. Yep. You know, we've gotten used to, as we're talking about next week, that playing games later at night, maybe that's the sacrifice that we make to kind of do the thing that we love, and that's fine. But I think I miss, you know, I think I just miss the not having to like devote short periods over long games, mm-hmm. or some of the games that I would probably want to play that I wouldn't even look at anymore. Like prior to the little one being born, you'd see me on games like Tropico or, you know, Seven, stuff like that. And, you know, these are games that take a long time, or like fannying about playing The Sims for a bit.
Yeah.
And it's like, I couldn't even be bothered with that anymore. Like, games not having a purpose for me at that point have just basically become redundant.
Yeah.
It's, and maybe you could say that that's similar to what I'm doing with like Helldivers at the moment, because there's no end goal to that game. Mm-hmm. It's just constantly updating, but I think that's what keeps it fresh. But I think that I miss being able to play games with no purpose.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when the Untitled Goose game came out.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That game came out in what? 2019, 2020 or something like that. Might even have been later than that.
I think it was earlier.
Earlier.
I think it was earlier.
But that came out, and everyone, you would see videos and clips of it all over the place. Everyone loving everything about it, right? But I'm playing this. I'm like, what am I doing with this? Like, any time that I can devote to playing games at this point has to be time that I'm putting towards something, you know, something beneficial. Mm-hmm. Like, there has to be a reason for me to do it. So I probably just miss the sort of wealth of games that I can play.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But kind of positive spin on that is that I'm playing games that I really want to play at that point. You know, like, you just devote that time to it. But I think that's probably the biggest thing that I miss. And also from being younger and being able to play Black Ops 2 at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you know.
Most of the days.
Do miss it. I do miss that sacking off uni to do it, but
we can see it now.
Can't do that now, you know.
Yeah, I know, man. Those were the days, man. Like, if it was a rainy day, it's like, yeah, let's just play that instead. I think the reason why I wanted to talk about this today is because, you know, last weekend was a weekend that will inevitably happen to both of us and others listening, where your partner is a man down, no well, sick. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, my wife unfortunately had a really bad weekend of it. She was just had to rest all weekend, and it was like, right, cool, it's just me at the rodeo this weekend. And that was fine, you know, you crack on, like you say, you make sure the kids are happy, they're entertained, and you know, you just kind of get through it. It can be exhausting, especially, you know, because mine are 3 and 6, and you know, the 3-year-old in particular is starting to push boundaries a lot. But I mean, he's really pushing boundaries. Like yesterday, he dropped an F-bomb at dinner, and it was creative punishment time had to come out. That's probably a subject for another show. But yeah, we got through the weekend and I just thought to myself, like, I was knackered, and it got to like the Sunday morning and I was like, I got nostalgic for like when we first moved in the house and we bought this house knowing that we wanted to start a family and stuff like that, and we'd have the wee sprogs kicking about, and we're lucky enough that that's happened. But it was like, man, I just got really nostalgic and for a second missed like just waking up at the weekend knowing it's like, right, I'm going to get up, maybe have a wee lie in and just kind of, you know, just going to do our own thing. My wife isn't a gamer, so it's like, yeah, I can just go in the afternoon, like, you know, playing a game in the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. Sounds daft, but it's like, oh my God, like just being able to sit and chill and do that and not even have a care in the world. And like you says, maybe just like, hey, Untitled Goose Game is out, I'm going to try that. Mm-hmm. Or I think like Firewatch, I remember doing that on the weekend. Yeah. And it was just one of those ones that's like, yeah, I can't do that anymore. And I know that as a grown-ass man, a responsible enough adult. But it's just like, it just came out of my head because it was just, I think you in that moment when you are knackered and they're on top of you,
yeah,
you're just like, you just want what you can't have. Mm-hmm. And all I needed in that moment was just a little bit of, you know, R&R. But it just made me think like, man, that was such a good time, such a privileged thing to do. And you know, if anybody's like about to have kids, you know, enjoy that and get as much of that in before you can, because it will quickly fade away. But you get a lot more back. You know, I wouldn't replace it because,
no,
you know,
100% no.
I might not be playing games. Instead, I'm sitting playing Paw Patrol with the figures and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, or I'm, you know, reading a story to them, or just, you know, generally just being Gordon Ramsay in here, just, you know, arranging raisins and stuff like that as a snack. You know, the things you do just to kind of, you make your own fun in those small moments. But that's kind of one of the things that came out of my head, you know, what I miss as a gamer and as a gamer parent. And there's a few other things as well that kind of spring to mind. I think, you know, not having to really think about what games you're buying as much. I mean, I'd probably say right now, from a disposable income point of view, I don't feel really any different because it's like, you know, if I had like enough money to purchase a game when I first bought the house, for example, it's pretty much the same by the time you're paying everything else out.
Yeah.
But it's like, it didn't have to count.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have to count the same way, because now it has to be like a sure thing. And I think back to when Marvel's Avengers came out.
Yeah.
And I was like, yep, here we go, Avengers time. You were wiser. It's like, nah, that looks absolute crap. And I was like, no, I'm going to buy it. And I remember playing it, and it's that kind of like wide-eyed smile, and then it slowly starts to fade and it becomes tears quickly, because it's like, I've just been fleeced.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know there's the big thing, like, oh, don't pre-order games and all that. And I'm very much just like, nah, I'll do what I want. Thank you very much. Buyer beware, I suppose, but you can't get them all right. But I think I used to love just being able to just kind of freely just kind of be like, yeah, I'll just go for this, go for that. And if it didn't work out, hey, I'll just trade it in. But we can't even do that anymore.
No, because game has shut its doors and doesn't allow us to do it. Then you need to venture into CEX.
I don't know what it is, but I hate going into that shop. Mm-hmm. I really do. The staff are lovely, and the staff are
brilliant. Yeah.
It's the walk up to them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. It's not so much the staff. It's just usually probably where it's located in a shopping centre.
Yeah.
And it's never a good vibe.
Nah.
Never a good vibe. And it's just kind of like a shop of sadness, because it is. It's a glorified cash converters.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I remember those very fondly, just memories of me and my dad going to cash converters as a kid. You know, it's the only place you could get mini disc players for a brief time back in the day. And my dad, he absolutely needed them for his line of work. But it was, you walk into that shop and the staff were always lovely. And usually by the time you're served, you can start to have a wee chat.
Yeah.
And what I like with it is they don't try and upsell you. Whereas in game, it was always like, hi, would you like to buy, you know, Pokemon Monopoly? It's like, oh, don't.
Do you want to be part of the game reward scheme or something like that?
Yeah.
Do you want to protect your disc for £1?
Yeah.
What am I doing with my disc? Launching it through my room or something like that?
I know. It can't be easy for them to ask that. Nah. They must know. They I know, must know. And they're just doing their job, you know. And
it's just annoying, it's a hard though. Job. It's because sometimes you do just want to get in and out. But, yeah. You know, there are times where you do stand and have a conversation and it's class, you know. With CEX, it's kind of a luck of the draw as well, because you can go in behind someone who's selling half of their DVD collection at that point in time. So
I heard half of somebody else's DVD collection. You know, depends on what you're going into. You can always tell. I mean, I think, you know, it's to get back on topic, I've kind of derailed us a little bit there, but I think, you know, ultimately, I think the biggest thing that's always going to come back to it is time.
Yeah.
You know, I think having time to freely enjoy your hobby, it's something I didn't appreciate at the time.
Yeah.
You know, hey, something I didn't appreciate at the time, which is like, hey, you know, this, I know it's always going to be part of my life. It's something that I want to do. This is like, I don't have a season ticket. I don't go to golf. I don't do that type of stuff. I'll game. But I think now it's like the time becomes so much more like precious to you. Almost as a bit of a crux,
yeah.
Because you know, I think that weekend there, my God, once I got the kids to bed and it was disaster after disaster. Like they were really, you know what kids are like, especially as fathers. It's like, I want mum,
yeah.
You know, and like it or lump it, 9 times out of 10, mum usually becomes the default parent, as they say. Mm-hmm. And I don't. That's a different topic, but it's like, That's not really easy, you know, and I do feel for mums because it's a position that they're kind of put in by the child.
Yeah.
And they don't really want to be constantly, you know, on their game, like going to just pass over to this other human that's looking after you. But, you know, mum's upstairs resting. They've got their old dad here. And it's like we put on sort of the noise machine for them at night time. It really helps with my daughter, but also, like, my neighbours are complete assholes and they just slam the doors every night. But it's like, I need to put that on to make sure they get a nice night's sleep. And, of course, put them in bed. And the Wi-Fi starts to drop out. So that, I then go into tech support mode and I've got 2 kids just kind of like, what's going on? What's going on? And they're just like, you know what it's like if you've not stuck the landing for bedtime. And yeah. I needed this bedtime so badly because I'm like, listen, I have got to clear out Junon and I need to do it now. I need to do it for my sanity.
I thought you were going to say like the kitchen or no. Something like that.
Oh, forget. I mean, that's just completely out the game. You know, the kitchen was a complete and utter sty, but I did get round to do it in the Sunday morning. I think sometimes you just have to do that. Like you make that choice. It's like, right.
Yeah.
What am I going to do here? And I think on that occasion, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth did prevail. But yeah, I mean, is there anything else that you miss as a gamer parent? I mean, there's no judgment here.
Yeah, no. It's hard to think. I think that you hit one of the nails kind of right in the head. It's the kind of, you have to get the value from it. Like, you can't really miss. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no point. I can count on every single hand that I've got, and more than 2 somewhere. But how many times I've bought a game and immediately regretted that? That's what I was doing just when you mentioned that. I was having a look at some of the games that I've bought. Rage 2. Like, why would I buy Rage 2? Not like Rage 1, right?
Yeah.
Borderlands 3, notorious Borderlands hater.
Yeah, that was surprising.
Why would I buy that? It obviously came out in 2019, but those are the ones that hit the hardest where I'm like, immediately regret it. So it's, as you say, where we are now in the world where, you know, you're one gas bill away from losing your home or something like that. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. But it's really, really difficult for people. And obviously we're lucky enough where we are still able to enjoy what we love, as well as, you know, bringing up a kind of young family and stuff as well. But You can't really afford to miss with these kind of things. So I think, as you're saying, when I was younger, I mean, I'd buy everything and anything. I'd buy a new console pretty much every single time one came out.
Mm-hmm.
I've probably kind of kept Sony afloat by how many PlayStation 3s that I've bought. and you know, it's just using all your money for that. But Now it's, you have to really think about keeping money aside for this, keeping money aside for that, trying to pre-order tactically, looking for value in things as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like using Shop2, for example, buying all your vouchers on there for cheaper. It's just trying to find ways every single time you have a birthday or a Christmas, you ask for vouchers so you can go and pre-order stuff. It's just, it's trying to do that. And even just, you know, one of my favourite memories is as a young boy, right? So this isn't even as teenager, but going to like the shops with my mum and dad, weekly shop, going into Asda and just buggering off to the game section.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Just going there and just looking at things. I can't do that now because you're obviously having to like maneuver a tiny child through the shops. you might get lucky and go and have a wee look, but you're not looking for anything in particular. It's just you're there just to kind of get what you need and get out, because nobody enjoys shopping with a 3-year-old.
No. Like,
nobody enjoys shopping with any child that young. So
no.
if you're going in there for something. But I would say that I miss that. I miss being able just to go and have a look through things in game, for example. Have a look at what's on deal, go and have a look at the pre-owned section, you know, taking the time for that. Maybe takes it away from gaming as a whole, but you know, there's more to being a, in quotes, gamer than the actual physical act of playing it and things. And a big one that I thought about today, came in my head earlier, forgot about it until just as I said that, but even just taking the time every single year when it would roll around and being able to watch E3 live.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's a good point.
Obviously, it doesn't exist anymore, but you've got the Game Awards, you've got all these different award shows where if we stay up and watch them, we're up till what, 2, 3, 4 in the morning?
4. Usually, right? 4, I think the last one was. It was up to, yeah.
And having to then wake up maybe 2, 3 hours later, you know.
You regret it every time,
but. Yeah. It's part of what we enjoy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to keep on top of the things as they come out and see the sort of trailers or get updated news on games, you have to make that sacrifice. And I'd love to sleep in, but it's not something that I would do. I love waking up on the Saturday morning, making breakfast, making pancakes and stuff. So if that's what you have to do to kind of enjoy that, then that's fine. But when we were younger, we'd stay up till that time anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like, you'd be lucky if we were in bed for 4 o'clock most nights.
Yeah, in separate houses, I should add as well.
But. No, living together, sleeping in the same bed.
Aye, we've got the same
holding the same controller.
Aye, no, it's that's a really good point. You're going to get me started now. Mm-hmm. You're going to get me started, but it's always been a big bugbear of mine. It's just how Pacific time centric all these events are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, the Game Awards is probably a good starting point. Like,
it's the only point now. Do you know what I mean?
That's the only point.
That's the only.
We got the Summer Games Fest, which but
it's the Keighleys, isn't it? It's all about Jeff Keighley at this point.
Yeah,
so it's what he chooses and what he wants to do at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it time and again on Twitter. It's like, massive respect to the guy for pulling it together.
Yeah.
But the only way this thing could go forward is if he starts putting himself at the front of it and mm-hmm. makes it shorter. Like, it's one of those ones, like, it's became a glorified, like, it's not even a Trojan horse marketing event. It is a marketing event. And mm-hmm. hey, we're all happy with that.
Yeah.
We live for the hype. That's the lifeblood of kind of the gamer community, I suppose. We love those big moments. But with the Game Awards, and it's, what's the word used earlier? It's egregious mm-hmm. how long it is. And
it's disgusting. That last one that we watched, when was that?
December.
Mm-hmm. Terrible with dates. But it's just having to sit through all this guff. Like,
aye.
You know, and it's great for trailers, it's great for things like that. But, you know, kind of taking it off piste here for this section, but the fact that not an acknowledgement of the current state of the industry at that time, you know, not having the balls to actually mention it or even talk about it in any way to hurry people off stage. I mean, we were joking about it the whole night, but it was like, what was it it was saying? It was like, please stop or something like that. Or they kept on playing the music before they even started talking. And it's like, this is probably the time where you want them to talk. you want them to actually stand up there and give a voice to this industry where people are losing their jobs all the time.
Yeah, 100%.
So it just felt, you know, if you're going to make it go on that long, at least make it about the people that are making the games.
Yep.
But as you're saying, it becomes all about Jeff at that point. It becomes about the exclusives. It becomes about, you know, world premieres. And it's great. I love that. That's the only reason I stay up for it, is because I might catch a glimpse of, God forbid, he shows a Metal Gear Solid trailer, because he absolutely hates Konami now. But,
love and hope.
But like, it's one of those things where that's why you stay up. But it gets to a point now where it's just like, it's just mad. Like,
yeah,
the times that we need to stay up for this. And it's like everything we enjoy now. You know, like, we're talking about watching WrestleMania in April.
Yeah.
April. And that's going to be two nights where we're going to have to be up to a ridiculous time. Now, we're talking, we're off the back of an event in Australia where you could watch it at 11 o'clock in the morning, and Americans were getting up in arms about actually having to stay up late to watch it.
Yeah.
Mad.
Yeah.
So, as I say, it's something that I miss it. I don't miss having to stay up, because I stay up anyway, but it's how it affects you on the other side of it.
Oh, it's hell. Mm-hmm. And it's total, you know, it's self-harm at that point, isn't it? Because you add up the next day, and it's always that day that the kids go, right, I'm going to get up really early, you know, 5:30. Who cares? You know what I mean? And it's like, yep, that's, you accept that going in, you've made that decision, and you take responsibility for it, and you reset, you just have an early night the next night, you try to, but... And I don't even think that's, you end up having one against your will, because you've just crashed out. But I think it's something, like, just being carefree and being able to indulge in your hobby wholesale is probably the big thing we're getting at. But I should also add, like, the other side of it. So, like, they've got the too late, then you get the too early. So if we look at Xbox, for example, Xbox do a good job in terms of, like, it's much more friendly for people on their side of the globe.
Mm-hmm.
It's always about 6 p.m. the day things kick off, but I also find, damn, I'm just like either post or in the middle of the dinner rodeo, depending on the type of day I'm having, and I just don't have time for this. And sometimes there's been occasions, I think usually around about what was E3 season, if it was like 6:30 or something, I could follow a plan and be like, look, I'm going to go watch this. Say to my wife, she's like, right, okay, probably look at me thinking, you're such a loser. And then off I go, and then I'm like, that was a, every time, that wasn't worth it.
Aye, you know, just shite. Yeah.
Wasn't worth it. And it's the same, like, State of Plays, they hit the sweet spots about 10 p.m. ish.
Yeah.
Same again. I think the last 6 or 7 State of Plays have been dug meat.
Yeah.
Like, none of them are really doing anything. And that applies to Nintendo Direct, which is like two in the afternoon. It's mental, but I mean, that doesn't apply to us as parents. It's I'm sure all gamers feel that frustration. And I think, you know, the further removed we get from the big hype moments of E3, the more I'm realizing we just don't have enough in them.
Yeah.
Like, do they need to be yearly at this point? Like, obviously they do, because, you know, you've got to make money, but you can either predict half of it at leaks, or they just are very underwhelming, you know, and it's that constant push-pull, you know, that's what you're up against, that's what you're constantly battling. But anyhow, that was a good fun topic anyway. But speaking of battling, it is time for this week's Pixel Picks Showdown, where Scott and I have a gentlemanly debate. We pick one game each, and we see which one we would agree gets to go on the Pixel Picks replay list, which is effectively what we're going to pass down to the next generation. Now, recap. Week 1, the winner was Super Mario Odyssey. That was all about platformers. Last week, the winner was Tekken 3, picked by Scott. And that was, of course, on the fighting genre. Now, this week, it is Superhero. That's what we've decided to go with this week. Now, as soon as you won it last week, I think it's only fair.
You go first.
I go first. Loser goes first. So... this is a fun one, I have to say, not just because I'm a complete slag for superheroes as a whole, but you could really get creative with your picks. Spoiler alert, I totally haven't. You will know what I've picked, but I think, you know, I looked at it and I think My honourable mentions, of course, would have went to, of course, the recent Spider-Man series, like Spider-Man 2 in particular, just because, I mean, that is a superhero-ass game.
Yeah.
Through and through. You know, it does exactly what it says on the tin. Also, the Spider-Man 2 from PlayStation 2 era.
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely incredible game. But, you know, it hasn't aged well. But
sorry, I know it's your point, right? But you're saying Spider-Man 2, but PS1 Spider-Man 2? Enter Electro or something like that is called.
Yes, Neversoft.
That is on my list because I thought I'll make a wee list of games that I remember playing and that was on it. Mm-hmm. I just don't remember anything about it. But I remember I was looking at screenshots of it today and the nostalgia for it hit me like a bloody train. So maybe Spider-Man 2, the movie, the game, everything about Spider-Man 2 as a whole in terms of if it's called Spider-Man 2, it's good.
Very true. I did think about Spider-Man for Neversoft, the PS1 version, purely the first one, because there's a lot of deep cuts in terms of comic book references and as well as the amount of Easter eggs they jam-packed into that game. But I digress. I thought, what has all of that? And what could I give to someone that's like, here is something that can really make you feel like the superhero? You know the answer I'm going to give. But it's Batman Arkham Asylum, right? And I say that I pondered long and hard because whilst I do think that Batman Arkham City is the best out of all those games, I haven't just recently replayed them again for the umpteenth time. Why Arkham Asylum gets it for me is purely there's something special about the atmosphere about this game and everything about it. I think there's a little bit of, because it's the first attempt, there's a little bit of like innocence about how they've put it together. It's not as polished. You know, the music's a little, there's not as like orchestral as like Arkham City. There's just something just a little bit raw and punkish about it. But this thing came out of nowhere, as we know. A complete behemoth it became overnight. It, right off the tails of the Dark Knight, Batman couldn't have been hotter if he tried it. And we've basically got this absolute masterpiece of game design, but more importantly, a superhero game. So it was a superhero game in every sense of the word, Batman Arkham Asylum is. So I think it was something that I didn't think possible in the sense that how much detail is in that game as a superhero, as a Batman fan. There is so much callbacks to some of the best stories ever told, and they take everything from every medium that he's been in, movie, animation, comic, and just make this quintessential, well, consummate version of the character. And of course it has, you know, the voice actors from the animated series, it has Paul Dini on the writing, massive fan of the animated show, and there's so many callbacks to it. I mean, you've got like some of the like the voice recordings you find in the game.
Yeah.
Like it is word for word, same episodes. Like I think it's when Harley Quinn meets Joker and it is word for word from the same episode in the animated show of how they kind of had the flashback meeting together. Just really, really cool Easter eggs like that. They've got people throughout. And I think because it's in a smaller scale to City, and I think the pacing of it is better, even if it's not technically a better game, that's why I'm picking that. Because I just feel that all in all, Arkham Asylum is one that I don't feel exhausted by the end of it.
Yeah.
I'm very much like, here, I'm going to, there's like 240 Riddler trophies, but maybe even less. And I'm just going to go do that if I want to. Might do some of the wee extra bits on the side. Whereas Arkham City, you know, I love Arkham City. I really do. But there is just, it's lacking that atmosphere. It's lacking the same heft. Impact is what Arkham Asylum did, and that's just because sophomore efforts always have that problem. But yeah, my pick has to be, unpredictably so, Batman Arkham Asylum, because that's probably my top three games of all time, to be honest.
I think when we set the call for superhero, it was very much it's gonna be one of those games.
Yeah.
And you know what, I'm surprised. For me, it was, you know, I was going to say Arkham City.
Mm-hmm. I thought you would have.
Because, you know, having played it myself recently and gone through it, and, you know, it has gliding in it. I honestly could spend hours just floating around in that game, and the glide boost, you know,
yeah,
that in itself is it makes it so good. But I'm not, you know, I'm not versed in Batman the same way as yourself. I'm not as big a Batman fan, but it allowed me to, you know, see some of these characters that I'm maybe not 100% sure about. But now that you've said Arkham Asylum, you know, again, it's fantastic, and it's the only Batman game in that series that I've platinumed. Because it's easy to do it, and it's not a chore in any way, shape or form. There's maybe parts in the story and parts in the sort of the gameplay for it where I'm like, that's a bit of a pain in the arse. Yeah. But you get through it quickly enough because it's not this long experience. And it is, it's Batman and the Joker, do you know what I mean? It's not Batman versus however you say, fucking Ra's al Ghul or Ra's al Ghul or whatever, whoever it is you want to watch it or say it from, but it's Batman and the Joker, and some of the scenes in it where you're walking through and, you know, you change between Batman and you're then really Bruce Wayne, the wee guy, and all that. It's class. It creates those moments that are just, you remember them. I remember moments in Arkham Asylum more than I remember moments in City.
Yeah, I mean, we all remember the infamous, like, the Scarecrow fake out when it faked exactly the kind of fail screen when you got the Red Ring of Death.
Yeah.
And everybody pat their chance when they played that for the first time. And then they totally twist and use the medium to their advantage in a way that they could, because this was a gamble.
Yeah.
You know, Batman games up to that point had been on the wholesale pretty average to terrible. And I know there's going to be people out there that go, oh, Batman Begins was good. And it's like, right, you played it, mate. You know what I mean? It's nowhere near what Arkham Asylum had became in that Metroidvania gameplay injected in it.
It had absolutely no right being as good as it was.
No.
And it's testament to how good it is, the fact that they managed to make three more within that, and what do you call them? Rocksteady. But then you've also got
WB Montreal.
Aye. Yeah, them still bringing it up as well. But no, I was going to say Arkham City, but then I thought, low hanging fruit. It's very low hanging fruit.
You know, I like that.
So, a few honourable mentions before I even get to the ones that I was going to talk about. So, superhero, you're talking about, you know, third person action games, you're talking about all these kind of things, but you've also got games like Injustice 2, that if you could pick a game where you could be one of the or all of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but also batter the fuck out of Hellboy.
Yeah.
You know, that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the classic NetherRealm story beats to it.
Yep.
And that they have become pioneers of the story mode. You know, you've seen it in Mortal Kombat now, seen it in everything. But I thought, when you're thinking about superhero games, it's all third-person action games. That's basically what we're looking at the moment.
Yeah.
So the honourable mentions, The Incredible Hulk 2008.
Yes. Right. Yes. I remember buying that off Amazon, dirt cheap.
Uh-huh. But even just running about, just breaking things.
Yep.
It was amazing. I don't remember actually even playing the game that much, but it was so good, yep. Right? Just complete mindless fun. I've obviously spoken about Spider-Man 2. I've spoken about, you know, the fighting games, but the one that stuck in my head when we started talking about superhero games, and it didn't hit when it first came out, didn't hit me when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
You had always said to me, you need to play this game. It is fantastic. It takes this group, which is going to spoil it now, takes this group of superheroes and does it better, I think. And it's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wow, yes.
It's full of heart.
Yep.
I enjoy the characters. When I started playing that game, I remember getting through the first mission and thinking, this is pish. I don't like Peter. I don't enjoy the characters because they were just off. They weren't the versions of the character that we're used to. You know, they're just a wee bit off. But then you start to get into it. You start to make the decisions. throughout the whole story. Yep. You start to spend credits in places that you shouldn't have spent it. And it's just, you start to get involved. And it's not, how to describe it? It's a fantastic story. It's so good, the way that it tells it as well. But you start to slowly fall in love with these characters. And it's unbelievable. You've got costumes. You've got the voice acting and stuff as well. I say Peter was annoying at the beginning, but by the end, you absolutely love him. It's fantastic.
You might even shed a wee tear.
I totally agree. But it's also got such a satisfying gameplay loop. I think that we are obviously talking about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth at the moment, and it's kind of got shades of that in it, where you kind of control one main character, but you could also then, you know, control parts of the other characters as well. Mm-hmm. And the music, the bloody music as well. You know, yeah. If James Gunn has done anything to media, it's popularizing a soundtrack that's just made up of absolute bangers.
I mean, I distinctly remember that the music shifting it to the kind of the 80s thrash type metal and kind of glam rock was an inspired move because you know it brought it up to it, gave it a point of difference. Mm-hmm. Did give it a point of difference. I think I always remember it was the Motley Crue tune that they had on it, and it was just when that ever kicked in, whenever you had like all the Guardians together and you had like the huddle type, it was been a while since I played it, but yeah, I mean, not enough people played it and gave it the attention it deserved, because there was a lot of love and care poured into those characters. I think you're right, once you get past the whole, you know, most people, I think probably about 98% of people's going to be, their touch point is the MCU, Guardians of the Galaxy, so they've made them a cultural phenomenon. But it's like, right, this is a wee bit off, you know, all bar Rocket, I would say, but they're all a wee bit off. But I mean, like, their version of Gamora, I prefer to the MCU version. Their version of Peter Quill, you do actually to prefer more.
I do prefer him more to Chris Pratt, to be honest with you. I think the only one that, you know, is Big Dave. You know, I think that we're also biased because it is Dave Bautista, you know, and he's fantastic in everything that he does.
Doesn't get enough credit.
We know we talk about kind of wrestling actors and things till the cows come home, but he is one of, if not the best, that's come out of it.
I would say so. I think he's the best actor.
The best actor, 100%. Yeah. And the movies that he's done, the movies that he's doing, you know, and doing, it's unreal. But I think that he's the only one. But even then, Drax in it is still, he's still hilarious.
Yes, yeah.
And I think that it's testament to how Bautista or Dave played him in the actual movie that he's the way that he is in the game, you know?
Yeah.
Because I've got no experience of Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, I'm probably the worst person to be talking on this topic because I have no idea about superhero stuff. I mean, I've only just started actually buying, you know, proper comics and stuff like that because it's interesting to get involved in. But it's, I think just thinking about it, I thought it's so different to the way that you would play a superhero game. When you're comparing it to the Avengers, for example, both of them group superheroes, but it's just taken in such a daft direction that a bit of love and care. I mean, you were talking about this Guardians of the Galaxy game forever. Yeah. You know, you've been talking about that. I remember you bringing that up years and years before it was even mentioned, and you were constantly wanting to look at it. And I remember the trailer dropped and you shat yourself, but it's just, I could go back and play it tonight and I would enjoy it as much as I did the second time that I played it, because the first time I just had no interest.
It's a really refreshing shout, I'd say, you've picked there, and I think it's good to hear it get some love, because it's a fantastic game, you know, and you know what we were mentioning at the start of the podcast, but you know, no game being perfect and that, yeah, it has its flaws, but it's fun, and it tried to do something a little bit different, because it could have just been right, okay, press R2 to shoot a Star-Lord and press R2 to, you know, bash someone through a wall as Drax, but like they really did try to do something different, and it was the love and care that they put into the narrative and the banter between the characters, and it grows with you.
Yeah,
you know, it's probably it's a grower, not a show.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah,
you know, I was trying to get information just about the soundtrack, because I remember that there was a band that they had made up. So the band that Star-Lord has an album at the very start of the game, and they created this band. Like, they don't exist, but they went and recorded a full album's worth of tracks just for that game. And mm-hmm. I thought, that's absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. Now, we shouldn't be surprised, because it's a Square Enix game, and the fact that, you know, they've put so much TLC into the soundtrack side of it. But yeah, it's... So, and then they had all the extra Easter egg bonuses all dripped all the way through it, you know, mm-hmm. Fing Fang Foom, shout out to him. And then you also had, like, all the alternative costumes and that as well. So, I mean, I wasn't... The biggest criticism I had, I wasn't a fan of the costume of Star-Lord in it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the big quiff and all that in his mask was just... It just didn't do it for me, so I ended up just going to the comic book style. And I'm sure they had the MCU style in there as well, so mm-hmm. if you wanted to, you could
play the whole team as that, but...
You could do the Chris Pratt simulator if you wanted to, if you're that way inclined. I will say, you know, Chris Pratt's Star-Lord in the first Guardians film was excellent.
Yeah.
But in 2 and 3, I mean, 3 redeemed it, but in 2, man, I couldn't stand him in 2. Like, I don't know what it was. It was something just off, but maybe it was just because Dave Bautista just... upstaged him.
Steals everything he's in.
Man's a legend.
Yes, he's so good.
I think it's time that we start talking decisions, because we could wax lyrical about how good both these games are all mm-hmm. night, I'm sure. I think my opening salvo is, despite how much I love and respect that Guardians of the Galaxy game, I think Arkham Asylum will pip this one, just because it might be the difference between an 8 out of 10 and a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
On this one, what's your thoughts, sir?
I don't think it could be anything but Arkham Asylum. Mm-hmm. I think the only game that you could take it from Arkham Asylum is Arkham City, and that's not the game that we've chosen. I think that, personally for me, I think Arkham City does everything that Arkham Asylum does.
Mm-hmm.
In gameplay, and does it better.
Yep.
So I think if you're looking at it from purely a gameplay loop, then yeah, 100%, I think Arkham City takes it for me. But I think that the atmosphere, the fact that it's enclosed, the fact that you've got this sort of small island that you're obviously kind of dealing with it all, you've got these big characters, and also it's, for a first game in a series, it's incredible, you know? Yeah. It's got no right being as good as it was, and as good as it still is. You know, we both played it recently,
mm-hmm.
and it holds up better than it's ever held up.
It really does.
It doesn't look out of place at all. Obviously, there's wee points in it where it's a wee bit, you know, a wee bit out of date, and there's kind of daft wee things in it that you think, you know, okay, but it's a juggernaut. You know, it walked so everything else could run after it.
Yep.
We wouldn't have Guardians of the Galaxy if we didn't have an Arkham Asylum, you know. I was trying to think of any superhero games that came out before it, but can't even think. But
I mean, there's one I know that I actually thought about this, but it was more for like a semi-serious pick, which was X-Men Origins Wolverine, like the uncut edition that came out in the 360.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't that was probably more of its time movie tie-in type, mm-hmm. but it was a damn good one. But yeah. But I think you have to go back to like Spider-Man Neversoft and stuff like that, really, too.
It's just, it just came out, and it literally just changed the way that, you know, I remember it coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember thinking, this is, it's unbelievable. It's a pure Batman game. Like, there's nothing else about it that's, there's nothing else within it that, you know, there's no like a third person shooter element to it. You know, it's just, you're purely Batman, and you're navigating your way through this thing, you know. It's class.
And beat for beat, that's the thing. Like, City, the only thing, the big criticism I'd have on it was, and when I first played it, I loved it, but see, in the years since I've replayed that game many times, it's the Catwoman section.
Yeah.
I think, like, the arse drops out of the pacing. And then with Arkham Knight, it doesn't really have a Catwoman, say, equivalent, but the pacing is an issue in that game.
Yeah.
And that's probably more to do with the controversial Batmobile things. I mean, I have played through Arkham Knight probably about 6 times or something at this point, and recently as well. And, you know, mechanically, the game is astounding. It shouldn't look that good for a PS4 game. It is stunning, but...
just that pan when you first shows you the world and then it pans and he's just standing there. It's like...
incredible.
It's mad. Absolutely no incredible. Right. I downloaded it on the Xbox recently to try and get it up-resed and it's just...
stunning.
Mad. It's
absolutely
mad.
Absolutely stunning. But, I mean, it's... I think that's the thing. It's more like... It's a tighter package, I think, for me. It's, and you're absolutely... you're comparing tens against tens in that series. And I have love for Origins. It's a good 8 out of 10, right? Mm-hmm. I do. I have love for it, but it's not up there. I think that trilogy, it's all tens.
Yeah.
All tens. But I mean, I think that we're in agreement then.
I don't think you could really argue against it. I think, as you say, if that game failed, there wouldn't be any other. Well, there would be other superhero games, but we would be looking at a different landscape of superhero games. Do you know what I mean? So
something terrible like live service superhero games.
Live service superhero games. Movie tie-ins that never worked.
Yeah,
I never really played the Thor ones and stuff like that. Like, you know, when the Thor movie came out,
the Sega ones
and stuff like that. I never really played them, but it's no interest in playing them.
Nah, nobody did. I mean, they were still in their infancy MCU. I remember when Thor, that film came out, it was a bit of a laughing stock. I didn't see that in the cinemas probably till about 18 months later. It came out in Blu-ray and my now brother-in-law was just like, no, it's actually really good. And I watched it and I was like, all right, okay, this is a pretty decent fish out of water story. But anyhow, I digress. That wraps it up for the Pixel Picks Showdown for this week. So congratulations, Batman Arkham Asylum. You are our third entry onto the list under the superhero tag. Well done, and Rocksteady, for the love of God, we hope you're well. Please, please make more of those type of games and less Suicide Squad, please, for the love of God.
Just to note, Suicide Squad's on sale in the PlayStation Store. He's going to buy it.
£20 a lit. £20 a lit.
That's the barrier of entry.
They'll get me with the story eventually because there's all those DC deep cuts and I'm not as big on DC as what I am with Marvel. I've always been a Marvel kid growing up, but DC I'll probably go as far as, you know, Light Justice League, Superman, Batman. Mm-hmm. Comic books are goofy as all hell, but I've always found DC a lot more goofy, but at the same time it can be a lot more mature. It's weird. That's so weird.
I think if I'm saying this correctly, so at the time that we're recording this, I think that Joker is showing up in it at some point as well soon. So
looks terrible.
It does. There's something about why they make Joker look this way. I remember when he was announced for Mortal Kombat 11, and he just looked like a wee emo guy. Like, it was just like, who the fuck is this?
Is it the Jared Leto effect?
It could be, aye, but it didn't even look like him. Like, even just to look at it, just looked like TV show Joker. Do you know what I mean? Like, it looked like the one from the... what's that TV show?
Oh, it's Gotham.
Gotham. It just looked like him. Yeah. But just a wee guy.
Is it Cameron Monaghan played him? Jedi Survivor?
Jedi Survivor guy.
Cal Kestis.
I don't know. But it's... there must just be something. They must just not like making him. There's only so many times you can make him look like Heath Ledger, or
I suppose. I'm sure someone will come back and make a very good version of a Joker, and he will indeed have the last laugh.
I want Jack Nicholson Joker. I want a Batman game in that era.
Oh, do you know what? I had today, like at dinner time, I always put music on and I had Prince Batman album on. It's fantastic. Prince is on a lot in this house. Shout out to the purple one. Or both purple ones if you're talking about Joker as well. But yeah, no, that was good fun. I thoroughly enjoyed that. But yeah, that's been another episode of the Pixel Parents podcast. I have been your host, Liam Kirk-Kelvin. Thank you again for joining us, Scott, my co-host. Welcome. Scott, the Tastemaker Curry.
The Tastemaker Curry, I love it.
And yeah, of course, you can find us on Twitter at @Pixel_Parents. You can get us on your podcast platform of choice, and we would love to hear from you. Write into us at pixelparentspodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, we'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Play Alan Wake 2. Again.